there's also many mission critical cases where, you know, you do want some sort of notion of verifiability, right? And when it actually comes time to do the verification or do the games around it, right, if it's either verifying a proof or enacting some sort of, you know, economic game around that, your options are either have a central party arbitrate it, and central parties can always be bribed, they can always mess with it, right? And that kind of, you know, fudges the security assumption, or put this behavior, you know, on a blockchain, right? Which is trustless by nature, you know, the state is controlled by many distributed actors.
We've teamed up with the Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol, the leading interoperability platform powering cross-chain transfers for 200 plus multi-chain teams. Claim your unique Wormhole NFT just for 0x Research listeners today. Pair is an innovative pair trading exchange built on top of Simio. Users can trade trending narratives with one click from blue chip narratives such as long BTC, short ETH, right through the whiff versus bump. The hat stays on. Simio's intent-centric architecture enables deep liquidity, source off-chain, and broad on-chain, and combined with Pair, has democratized access to complex trading strategies typically reserved for institutional traders. Marinade is a staking protocol on Solana, and the only stake pool that delivers auto-rebalancing, MEV rewards, and automatic downside protection with new protected staking rewards. Optimize your SOL stake with Marinade by hitting the link below. Before we get into today's episode, just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast by either myself or any guests are their personal views and do not represent the views of any associated organization. Nothing in this episode should be construed or relied upon as financial, technical, tax, legal, or other advice. All right, let's jump into the episode. All right, guys, welcome back to another episode of 0x Research. We have a great episode lined up today with Sunil, the founding member of Vitro, a global sovereign execution layer for AI. Today is Friday, March 29th. As a reminder, be sure to use code 0xresearch10 at app.blockworksresearch.com for 10% off your annual subscription. On to the interview with Sunil. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, I'm really, really excited to chat here about crypto AI and Ritual's vision.
Likewise. So before we get started and dive into it, I want to start relatively high level since everyone's super excited about AI, but I don't think a lot of people have much clue what's actually happening out there. So for starters, could you just explain to us what a coprocessor is and then what specifically an AI coprocessor is?
For sure, yeah. I think largely when you look at what coprocessor has meant within the context of crypto, right? It's the idea that there are certain external functionalities, largely modes of compute, that are not easily performed within like a native blockchain's environment. And so you basically have some other piece of infrastructure that is able to do that and then bridge, you know, the output from that form of compute, you know, back to, you know, whatever it needs to be, right? And so what that, you know, maybe means is like, if I'm on Ethereum, it's obviously not feasible for me to go and, you know, write an entire AI model in Solidity, right? The way I would do with PyTorch or any other, you know, AI implementation, because yeah, I don't know, you know, how much you would pay, but probably way more than you should, right? But the reality is that there's going to be a lot of applications that want to have sort of models in the loop, right? And they want to be able to access these models. Maybe a good example of that, and we can go into use cases, is, you know, if I have a Morpho Blue lending pool, right? I can take, you know, a model and use that to compute what an ideal loan-to-value ratio is to parameterize the pool, right? But I can't do that model. I can't run it in a smart contract. So how do I actually get it on chain, right? And so what an AI coprocessor is basically a way to allow applications on Ethereum, on, you know, Base, on, you know, Solana, or any other chain, right, to be able to go and actually access ML models and AI models for various use cases, right? Whether it's using that as part of like the application flow, or using that to actually, you know, create new types of ways for people to interact, like AI agents and natural language interfaces for interacting with the chain. And how do you actually connect that and, you know, have these models reflect an on-chain behavior and actions is sort of what the processor is aimed to solve.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Following up then, so you say that, you know, like running these crazy AI models, these crazy like AI loops or like ML algos don't make a lot of sense on-chain. And I think that's kind of what you're seeing with L2, right? They're moving like the execution off-chain. Then for something like an AI coprocessor, how do you sort of verify that the execution was done correctly?
Yeah, for sure. So I will add an interesting caveat, and I know we're going to talk about the Ritual chain later, about what it means to actually have models on chain, and it's very different. But for the coprocessor, I think it, you know, it's an interesting case. I think it's always been my opinion that verifying the results of a certain computation, especially like models, really depends on the end use case, in terms of whether or not people even want that. And then the type of verification you do depends on what sort of security guarantees you want and the type of model it is. So to give an example of that, if you're having a model that is controlling some sort of financial value on chain on behalf of users, it's likely to be more of a classic supervised learning model architecture. Those generally conveniently fit within, you know, zero knowledge circuits. And so you can generate a zero knowledge proof for that actual model run through, and that's your proof, right? And in that case, it makes absolute sense that, you know, users would want verifiability. You know, this model is controlling or being used in the loop of controlling my funds. I want to make sure that someone's not gaming it, right? Or messing with the outputs relative to the inputs that were passed in. I think there's also other use cases where it's like, if I use an image generation model, right, like a Stable Diffusion model, to go and generate an image and mint that as an NFT, I may not particularly care that the Stable Diffusion model actually, in most cases, that the Stable Diffusion model was run correctly to generate that image, insofar as like I care that that image looks like what I want it to look like, right? And if it doesn't, then I'll just keep prompting it until it does, right? And so in that case, like, you know, maybe there's people who do care about that, right? Who's to say? But, you know, in that case, it may be the case that, you know, verifiability is not as critical. In terms of the schemes that you can use to do this, there's been a number of constructions. I think the most popular are things that we've seen in other realms of crypto. So there's zero knowledge proofs, right? You can pack certain models into circuits, and that has its own trade-offs. But generally, that's very well adapted for smaller models. It's kind of hard to pack in larger models like the, you know, transform models that underlie LLMs into those. You have optimistic proofs, which are, you know, just very similar to the way that, you know, optimistic fraud proofs are done with rollups, right? Only in this case, it's models. That is generally suitable for like higher throughput and for larger models, because it's not relying on, you know, being able to, you know, constrain into a circuit and prove it over a certain amount of time. It just relies on someone else, you know, having access to that model. But in that case, you need to be able to share the model, right? And the model needs to be open source. And then there's people that are using trusted execution environments, which have been well covered. So I won't maybe go into all the nuances there, but yeah, that's a sampling. And at Ritual, we're also working on a number of proof techniques that scale beyond these around this space, which we will unveil in the months to come.
Nice. I know Ren and I are both excited for that. But can you kind of explain some of the core problems in the more traditional AI stack, if you will, that led to the creation of Ritual today? And like doubling down on that, I think there's a lot of skeptics who are kind of like, you know, why does this need to be on chain? Like, so what really are the benefits of on chain versus off chain AI?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. So one thing with Ritual, if you go look at the way that Infinet is architected, is that the nodes can actually take both on chain and off chain requests and put the outputs on chain and off chain. And so it's not so much as like one or the other, but I think like there is going to be a merging, and it's a spectrum of what you want. And I can dive into different usage patterns. But to sort of answer the question around like what we saw as sort of problems with the stack, the current AI stack works for a lot of things, right? I'm not going to deny that, right? But overwhelmingly, I think that there's a lot more interesting behavior that you can enable when you bring models to, you bring cryptographic primitives to models, and you provide sort of like a common substrata for verification of those primitives, right? Or game theoretic primitives or whatever other secure primitives. And to give maybe a more concrete example of that, right? You know, in the current landscape, you know, we just talked about verifiability, right? You actually don't know if someone who's running a model for you is running it correctly. And in some cases, like I said, it's okay. Like it is what you know, what you see is what you're happy with, then you're probably not going to challenge it. You know, Akash from our team always likes to say that no one ever asks why they got 100 on a test, only why they didn't, right? But there's also many mission critical cases where, you know, you do want some sort of notion of verifiability, right? And when it actually comes time to do the verification or do the games around it, right? If it's either verifying a proof or enacting some sort of, you know, economic game around that, your options are either have a central party arbitrate it, and central parties can always be bribed, they can always mess with it, right? And that kind of, you know, fudges the security assumption, or put this behavior, you know, on a blockchain, right? Which is trustless by nature, you know, the state is controlled by many distributed actors. That's one thing. From maybe zooming out, you know, from a use case to more of like a thesis wise, I think that if you follow the history of technology, right, it always is the case that new technology is made, another person or an entity finds a way to do that technology really well, and then the value, then people know how to do that like in aggregate, and then the value moves up the stack because there's so many people doing that, right? So we started with chips, and then you know, that was Intel. And then we went to computers with IBM and then the operating system with Microsoft. We found a way to network these things. That was the internet. Then we found a way to build applications. And then we found a way to get data from these applications. And now we have like a lot of data. We know how to make a lot of data, right? But we're at a very interesting point where there's like two directions, right? One is like crypto is like, we can take this data, we can make it hyper-composable, we can create incentives around it, we can create governance around it, we can create coordination mechanisms in a trustless, fair way. We can basically like bridge a lot of the trust assumptions of this data flow. And AI is like, we can take this data and make it, you know, supercharge it, you know, make it, put it on steroids, make it sentient, right? But I think those two need to come together. And so like, if you look across the entire AI stack, like there's many benefits that the entire AI supply chain has from actually taking advantage of these like governance and incentive and like composability primitives, right? A really good worked example that, you know, I'm particularly excited about is ChatGPT is banned in most parts of the world, right? Because it's viewed as like an import for Western ideology in the Middle East and Asia, et cetera. In general, like not all models that are like tuned in a certain way by safety teams are, done so with like everyone in mind, right? It's hard if you have like five people in a room in Silicon Valley that are deciding whether what a model can and can't say, right? So there's ways probably using crypto to take like a base model and then have people in sort of like a DAO coordination structure basically vote on like what the model can and can't say, right? Like if it's a local group, right? If we want, you know, an LLM for like the ZeroX Research podcast, right? And we want it to be able to modify its behavior, but everyone wants to make sure they have equal say without, you know, needing arbitration. That's something where crypto comes in. So there's many sort of examples like that where you can take the existing AI stack and the way data flows in it and essentially flip it on its head, right? All the way from, you know, training, which companies like Jensen are doing, down to, you know, the full stack of AI operations and inference, you know, which what we're doing. So yeah.
Appreciate the explanation there. Before we dive into sort of more nerdy technical questions, I think it'd be good to give an overview of, in general, what Ritual is, and similarly, why it's described as an open, modular, sovereign execution for AI.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great question. What does it actually mean to be a sovereign execution layer for AI? Why is, for lack of, you know, less coarse words, why is Ritual, you know, not just another crypto AI grift? I think that there's very, very interesting behavior that you unlock when you really, really do a first principles examination of the architecture in which some of the infrastructure is created, right? A very good example of that, or a very good live example of that, that are not in the AI domain are like what Argus is doing by putting game engines next to sequencers. Same thing with MegaEth in terms of scaling the actual sequencer capability, or what Monad's doing with parallelization, right? Turns out there's actually still quite a bit of innovation at the base layer. One thing that we've been really, really excited about is the ability to extend stateful precompiles around, you know, virtual machines to essentially, around the EVM, to essentially go and add added functionality, right? That goes beyond sort of like, this, you know, the base spec, right? And it turns out you can do this with, you know, AI operations, right? So the very simple way I, you know, explain this is what we are building is a sovereign execution layer, right? Nodes on this execution layer that are running the execution client and the consensus client will also be nodes that have the ability to service models and their operations, right? Where they have access to GPU compute or really powerful CPUs, right? What this means is that we can go build a bunch of stateful precompiles that connect, you know, the actual execution client to these models and the operations that need to be run. So calling things like inference, calling things like fine-tuning, calling things like distillation or quantization or whatever other model operation can be done with a few lines of smart contract code, right? The first phase that we have, InfraNet, is sort of like a oracleized version of this, right? The idea is that we built a standard interface on like the target chain. You can submit requests for inference, right? You can receive outputs from inference on chain. You can submit requests off chain. You can receive them on chain, whatever you want, right? Whatever the flow is, right? But to actually go and enshrine this in the chain architecture, so it's not like, you know, I'm submitting this transaction and, you know, then I have to wait for the finalization and then the node picks it up and sends it out and it comes back to me, right? Which is still very useful, but to instead of have that actually enshrined is what we're aiming to do. So what does this actually mean for like end users and developers, right? We still want to be, you know, the shelling point for how, you know, other chains will access models, right? We believe that Ritual is going to be the best place to host models, the best place to use them, to discover them, et cetera, and actually, you know, run the compute. So using general message passing, right, we can have other chains access Ritual as a co-processor. But if you're also a builder, you'll also be able to build natively on Ritual. We'll support full VM EVM functionality in addition to all these additional functionalities, right? So if I want to build, let's say, a certain type of, let's say I want to build an AMM, right? But I have the curve actually dynamically set daily by a model, right? Based on some behavior, right? Instead of basically like finding a way to like push this up daily through like an Oracle infrastructure, right? Actually write into my smart contract, like, hey, I want to call this model. A node on the network is going to be able to service that and transaction and like push the updated parameters or push the output, right? All natively within the VM and the execution. And so what that does is like, it's sort of the hidden mode of bringing AI on chain, right? It's not just being an AI coprocessor and having the models run off chain, but functionally the models are existing the same place the chain is existing.
Yeah. Just for our audience, could you define what like stateful precompiles are?
Sure. Yeah. Probably the simplest way, and there's going to be, developers that are way, way better at this stuff. Please don't come at me. The simplest way I can describe it is it's a way to extend functionality around a chain, like a certain execution client, right? Without having to write in that chain's native language, right? So if you're an EVM, you can write a stateful precompile in Go and tag that on and have people basically be able to call that from a contract. And that runs this function, that runs this basically script that's written in Go.
Okay, that's a super helpful description. And another thing,
not exactly one to one. I'm gonna add that not exactly one to one, but that hopefully gets the idea across in the context of Ritual.
No, it definitely does, Ren. I do have one question on this topic. So you mentioned that nodes should be able to have idle GPU or CPU power that they can use to kind of train some of these models. Like, does the geographic dispersion of these nodes not add additional latency that leads to subpar results to like a traditional AI company who maybe has a giant warehouse located close to like where they're running these operations?
For sure, yeah. So to be clear, Ritual, right, isn't currently focusing on training, right? We want to focus on parts of the AI operation stack that hopefully aren't as burdened with that. You're actually absolutely right. Distributed training is incredibly hard. There's a step in training called backpropagation, which is like, for the viewers, when I'm running a piece of data through the model and I want to see how much that's supposed to improve my model, I actually need to take, that piece or that batch of data and run it back through the model, right, and update all the weights, which takes a really long time if you're doing distributed context. In comparison, inference and quantization and distillation are more one-to-one operations, right? Like, if I want to access a model and like, Sam, you're running a node, right, on the Ritual network, right? You just have to be able to pull that model, right, and have that model ready to go. And I send my output and you compute it and you send it back. That's a lot, that's a lot faster, right? And more importantly, it doesn't require this backprop step and like communication with other nodes. It's just, sort of peer-to-peer, right? In the notion of like, is geographical dispersion important? Yes, obviously we want this to be a very distributed chain. And yes, we want to be cognizant of user preferences. So we're also working on interesting ways to express those preferences over the chain, right? It's not good enough that, users just come, they have all these models to access, although that'll very much be the first pass. But, in the future, we want it to be a little bit more intelligent, a little smarter about how their requests get routed and encapsulating preferences like types of model, type of compute, but also, where is the node actually serviced for latency is absolutely important. So it is something that is on our mind, and there's been people that have already done some work here, but yeah. We largely focus on operations that aren't going to be hindered, or like the operation itself doesn't need to be distributed across multiple nodes. For the time being, there are certain things on the roadmap that do touch upon that.
Wormhole is the leading interoperability platform for multi-chain bridges and applications. With over 1 billion messages sent and 40 billion in value transferred, Wormhole leads the industry in cross-chain message volume and total value transferred. If you're a builder, Wormhole has an extensive suite of tools and infrastructure to securely build multi-chain applications. You can use Wormhole to power DeFi, NFTs, governance, and so much more. And Wormhole supports over 30 blockchains and 6 different runtimes. Claim your unique Wormhole NFT just for 0x Research listeners today. Fill out a form, prove that you've listened to today's episode to receive a Pro app, and you'll get an email over the coming weeks to claim your limited edition NFT. Pair is an innovative pair trading exchange built on top of Simio. Users can trade trending narratives with one click, from blue chip narratives such as long BTC, short ETH, right through the whiff versus bump. The hat stays on. Simio's intent-centric architecture enables deep liquidity, sourced off-chain and bought on-chain, and combined with Pair, has democratized access to complex trading strategies typically reserved for institutional traders. Marinade is optimized Solana staking. Stake natively or liquid stake with Marinade and get the same high performance delegation strategy that thousands are using today to stake your SOL to over 100 of the best Solana validators. The delegation strategy is a first of its kind and only possible on Solana. It delegates your SOL to the network's best validators with no smart contract risk. In addition, Marinade has just built a new and improved delegation strategy that delivers maximum performance with auto rebalancing, MEV rewards, and automatic downside protection with new protected staking rewards. And this allows for maximum decentralization for Solana too. Optimize your SOL staking today with Marinade by hitting the link below. Sort of another thing that I wanted to touch on for Richard was the Celestia announcement from yesterday, right? It was sort of like a big partnership announcement. So just a few questions there. One, what does that partnership entail? And the second question is, why did you choose Celestia over other DA layers, whether that's EigenDA, Avail, or even like ETH mainnet itself?
Sure, yeah. So I think with Celestia, it's the start of many things in terms of what DA means for the Ritual chain, right? I think that largely the DA has been used in the context of like infrastructure, right? But I think it's also very important to recognize that DA and Blobstream, what Celestia has built, is very flexible, right? There's actually a lot of things that can be stored here that isn't just like chain state and stuff like that. And so the point of doing it with Celestia was actually to provide more so of an option, right, for people's chains. We love the Celestia team. They're great. And we want Celestia to sort of be, you know, power a lot of interesting workflows. I'll give you an example that sits outside maybe what the canonical idea of like how Celestia is used, right? Posting a validity proof for the zero knowledge, for a zero knowledge proof of like inference, right? Posting that validity proof to Ethereum can be expensive, or posting it to another layer can be expensive. We can post, users will have the option to post proofs that they generate as part of their inference workflows on the Ritual network. You know, whatever that proof looks like, we're very modular, so we support a bunch of proof types to Celestia for quick retrieval by anyone and verification, right? With like best-in-class data availability and security guarantees. The same is, you know, possible for other DA layers, right? Of course. But with Celestia, you know, we've known the team for a really long time, and so we wanted to make sort of like a more streamlined way for people to go do that. That being said, you know, as always, you know, it's never in the right ethos, I think, as a protocol builder to enforce certain options on your users, right? And so, like, if users want to go architect their own workflows for the other, you know, DA layers they mentioned, that's on them, right? But with Celestia, the intention is to create a streamlined workflow for that. And, you know, just because we know the team and we know that they've worked really hard to ensure a good level of security and decentralization. So it is an option, an important option that users will have for DA across the network. And you know, not necessarily just the chain.
Gotcha. So I take it that means that as more DA layers come online, users will be able to like opt into these various DA layers. They're not sort of locked in into Celestia, right?
Yeah, it's if that's what they want, right?
Yeah.
I don't think any protocol, right? Like we also said, I don't think any protocol. I think it, you know, it'd be against the ethos of decentralization to enforce sort of developer abstractions and paradigms, but with Celestia, we aim to create an easier experience for developers. So obviously we can work well with them. And there's a lot of parts where DA fits in beyond obviously the chain state, like I said, proofs, attestations, transactions to create interesting schemes, all those kind of things.
You mentioned one of the use cases of Celestia, one of the ways people will use Celestia is posting proofs. So for example, like Ritual's like Infinet created a ZK proof, right? And so in a normal like roll-up environment, you check that ZK proof against valid state diffs to make sure that's valid, right? What is the state diff equivalent for AI, whether that's like inference or like fine tuning?
Right. Oh, that's a great question. So those are two different things, right? Like inference and fine tuning are very different options. And like state diff, I think, looks very different in that case. In inference, I think it's very straightforward, right? You want to basically prove that an input led to an output for a given model, right? That's important. So I know that like, you know, if I'm giving you Ren like a bunch of my input and I need this output to for some part of my like protocols and applications functionality, right? I know that you didn't take an input and, you know, tweak with the model run through or like tweak with the output, you know, before you sent it to me. I can directly create sort of like that mapping between input and output. For fine tuning, it's a little bit, you know, different. The state diff sort of looks maybe, you know, it's an Occam's razor explanation, right? For fine tuning looks like saying that like a certain piece of data or batch of data that was passed in, right, led to a certain change in like the model weights, right, or led to an end result, right? And so the state diff actually probably is closer to like for a given set of like inputs, right, the equivalent, you know, in roll-up land being transactions, right, but in this case it's fine-tuning training data, right, led to a change in weights from like, you know, weight state A to weight state B, right? And that would be the roll up equivalent of like from, you know, batch one to batch two, right? What's the state difference, right? So yeah, that's how I would quantify that. It looks different, but yeah.
I got a AI noob question that I wanted to ask, since you mentioned like sort of like the input and output. Is AI inference like deterministic? Meaning that, for example, like if I ask GPT-4 like the same prompt with the exact same context, then I would get the same response every single time, or is it non-deterministic and I would get different responses every time? Because I would imagine then that sort of like changes the dynamics and the verifiability of like these proofs.
Great question. So very, very interesting question. The answer is that it depends on the model that you use. A lot of the more, a lot of the classical supervised learning models like regression and tree-based are a lot more deterministic. But I think LLMs is sort of what's on everyone's mind. And so that's what I'm going to address. The answer is at their base, no, right? LLMs use floating point mathematics, right? Which can lead to non-determinism in terms of like what it's run to the hardware, the configuration, et cetera. However, there are ways to make this deterministic, right? And specifically in the, you know, as it relates to this, again, I want to enforce that it's, we haven't found a way to efficiently put an LLM in a zero knowledge proof, right? But regardless of whatever you do, right, when whatever time it is with anything that has to go into zero knowledge proof, you need to quantize the numbers. What that means is you need to make them fixed point, right? You make them close to the closest integer because that's the only way they can operate over cryptographic fields. However, independent of that, right, if I want to construct an optimistic proving scheme, right, for example, for an LLM, right, that means that when I run an LLM and you run the same LLM, we need to make sure that in order for that scheme to work for given input output, that we can have determinism, right? We can make sure that if we're both right, then the inputs and the outputs are, you know, the same. How do you do that? Is you actually run these quantization schemes. It takes the weights of these LLMs, converts them from floating point arithmetic to fixed point arithmetic, right? And that adds like a level of determinism. And at the onset of sort of like a lot of LLMs, doing this actually led to a drop off in performance because you lost some expressivity when you sort of have to truncate decimal values, etc. But people have come up with really clever and nice quantization schemes that have basically, you know, made the drop off in perplexity, which is sort of like the way you measure the competency of these LLMs, much lower, to the point that it is very feasible. So yes, for LLMs, they are non-deterministic at base. There's a way to make them deterministic without losing too much performance. And that's called quantization.
Yes, the old floating weighted mathematics. I wish you would have led with that one. No, I'm just kidding. Ren mentioned the infranet. Can you explain what that is? I am totally novice here, so would appreciate any basic baseline understanding.
Right. So infranet is phase one of Ritual, right? Ritual's end goal, like I said, is to build a sovereign layer where AI is really enshrined core to the protocol. Infranet is our way of basically exposing this paradigm to users ahead of that. And so what you can think of that as is an AI-optimized Oracle network, right? We have two parts of Infranet, which is the Infranet node and the Infranet SDK. The Infranet node is what anyone can run off-chain. That has a bunch of really nice abstracted workflows for connecting to on-chain or accepting things off-chain, right? And that's where you run your models. You would connect your Infranet node to wherever your models run, whether it's locally or on like an external, you know, party or even to a closed source model, right? So whether your model is on AWS or you're calling OpenAI or you're running your model on your laptop, your Infranet node can sort of sit there, pick that up, and then connect it to the rest of the world. Now, how does it connect it to the rest of the world? That's where the Infranet SDK comes in. The Infranet SDK lives on the target chain. It can live on, we currently support all EVM chains, right? So we can deploy it to any EVM chain. Users can use the Infranet SDK to kick off a request for inference, right? There's ways to pass in, like, I want this data. You know, it goes into our coordinator contract and nodes can pick that up and fulfill that request and put the output back on chain. But we also built it with flexibility in mind, right? We realized that people aren't always going to want to put their inputs and outputs directly on chain. They may only want part of that, you know, on chain or off chain. So the Infranet nodes also expose REST endpoints where users can pass in requests like off chain, right? And then, you know, they can take requests, they can take the outputs off chain or they can take the outputs on chain. They can pass in requests on chain, take the outputs off chain, whatever it is, right? Those work. And so the way to think about this and conceptualize this is that this is like a purpose-built, you know, AI Oracle network, right? And this is also sort of the foundation for scaling out into the Ritual chain, because going from that to the chain is, you know, basically having the nodes become, you know, active participants in the ritual chain. So you can use Infinet today. It's live. It's a live product. People are using this. We have, I have to get back on the node count, but we have people running nodes and running models. There's applications that have been built on Infinet. Someone used Infinet to create AI-generated haiku NFTs. There was another thing called FriendRug, which was like an LLM that lived in like a friend tech chat room, and you try to convince it to buy and sell your keys or buy and sell other people's keys, which was cool. And we're bringing on a lot of partners and stuff that we'll be announcing that are using this. We just announced MyShell. MyShell will be using Infinet to power sort of their AI agent app creation with on-chain sort of incentives and ownership models. And they'll be using us to record those flows.
Following that description of sort of a Oracle network, right? Oracle networks, as most people know today, you know, like the Chainlink and PIF, more often or probably less often did not have some form of staking and slashing mechanism. And so there's some like quote unquote crypto economic guarantees there. What sort of like trust assumptions are there when using the Infinet?
So the Infinet SDK allows for people to pass in arbitrary proofs, right, around the integrity of their inference, right? Whether that's a zero knowledge proof, whether that's an OPML proof, like an optimistic proof, whether that's some other proof, right? You can pass that in as call data, right? And people can run their verifications. But that's optional, right? If people don't want to do that, they don't have to do that, right? So in the case where someone's not doing that, then, you know, the trust assumption is that you're trusting who's fulfilling this on the other end, right? And that's why I said it's important that users are able to express their preference for that. To the extent that, you know, there are certain economic systems and whatnot, we've been working on and we'll be releasing interesting work around this in terms of allowing people to express that in the coming months. But if someone wants to go and extend that on top of Infinet right now, it's all on chain, right? It's all very composable. So yeah, the sort of trust assumptions around the inference and usage of that is either tied to like the proof as it related to that, the model itself, right? Or done sort of in a peer-to-peer manner.
Gotcha. That makes sense. So the Infinet's sort of this stage one of Ritual that's live today. And I know in the end goal, there's this sort of idea of a Ritual superchain, right? Which contains a suite of modular execution layers, each containing specialized stateful precompiles overfit to different classes of arbitrary computation. I just say like a lot of buzzwords. Could you explain what the Ritual superchain is and what it's sort of meant to do?
Yeah, no, for sure. So It's what I explained earlier, where it's like what we want to build is the Ritual VM, right? Which is this custom built VM that allows people to go and basically access models in a way that's native to the chain, right? As opposed to like an Oracle, like you can actually call within the contract. So the execution environment we're targeting initially will be VM based. And then as for other execution environments, it's very much, you know, still work in progress, but we would like to support them, right? As far as the Ritual chain, it's always sort of like developing and what it is, but we want to give people the best developer experience possible from day one, right? And the best way to do that is to give them something they're familiar with and then add in all the AI functionality. So that's what the chain will be. You know, it's my hope that in the future, the Ritual VM will be able to basically be adapted to other types of execution environments, and those can build sort of like rollups, et cetera, on top. So you won't just need to program in Solidity and access these models. You can program, you know, in other, you know, native languages like Move, et cetera. Using the Ritual VM, but with this client on top, and, you know, rolls back down to the base Ritual chain.
In terms of interoperability, like if you need connections between one chain and another chain, whether they're both EVM or maybe one's a Cosmos chain and one's an EVM chain, like how important is that? How are you guys aiming to solve that? I think I read something about a general message passing protocol that you have, you know, embedded within Ritual. Is that like in-house built, or are you leveraging some other technology stack to help you there?
Yeah, I mean, we can't do everything, right? So we likely will be working with, you know, existing general message passing protocols with people who know that very well and have done that very well to integrate that. And yes, it's absolutely important, right? Like we want people to come build on Ritual chain. We do think this will be the best and easiest way to access models in a sort of crypto native way, and vice versa, you know, create really interesting crypto primitives around models. But we also want to continue supporting other chains, right? We don't plan on deprecating Infinet for the time being until we can have that GMP up and running. And so once that's possible, we also want Ritual Chain to be the place in which, you know, other chains can use Ritual for, you know, AI-related activity and have it posted back via these GMP protocols. So yeah.
Would the general message passing layer for between like blockchains and Ritual Superchain mostly be used to sort of, I guess the question here is, what is it going to be transporting, right? Is that going to be like output of like the module computation? Is it for like different proofs depending on what data layer they want to pose it to?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it essentially would be, you know, potentially all of the above, right? Like if I'm sitting on Ethereum and I have an application that wants to make use of inference, right? There should be a really easy way using this messaging platform, this general messaging protocol, right? To call RetroChain, have a node on the RetroChain, execute that, right? And then pass the outputs back to Ethereum.
Gotcha. And then following up on sort of like the GMP there, you know, definitely like you guys can't do everything yourself, but would it be sort of a design where you guys only work with one GMP layer, or for example, will users be able to choose between like multiple GMP layers depending on like whatever set of like trust assumptions they want to opt into?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think like, again, like some of that is still very much a work in progress. We've talked to a number of them, but I think it's likely, you know, it's always better to give users optionality where they can, right? But we always want to sort of prioritize what's performant, what users want. And so we'll be bearing that in mind and getting feedback from the community as we continue to do some of that.
I'm going to zoom out here just because there is a ton of crypto X AI projects like on the market today. Like, how would you describe the the current landscape of AI and crypto? Like, what inning are we in? How fast is this thing going to move? Like, do you think like the people who are saying this is going to change the world in 18 months are actually on target there? Or do you think that this is going to take like quite a bit of time to play out?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So, okay, maybe to give some context, right? Like prior to Ritual, I've spent time at funds like Dragonfly and Polychain Accomplice, right? So having seen sort of like market cycles move forward, I think there's like a very, very interesting phenomenon that happens, right? Which is largely that like you have during bull cycles, right? A lot of capital that gets funneled into like the new shiny thing, right? And generally that leads to a lot of hype and a lot of maybe, I would say, you know, interesting expectations around it, but it's not a bad thing, I would say, right? Because it does actually drive a lot of developer interest. It drives a lot of capital to long-term development in that space, right? And we saw that sort of with like more performant, you know, base layers and L1s and L2s, right? It was like L2s were being developed during the last bull cycle. And it wasn't really, you know, until the bear market that like, we started seeing them really being like used and finally got 4844, right? So how does this relate to crypto AI? I do think that the promise of this space is undeniable. I actually don't think there's a world in which crypto and AI exist without each other, right? I think that you absolutely need those two sort of in union. And I think that there's been a lot of promises made about what can and can't happen. I do think meaningful things will get done. We already see a lot of interesting experimentation at the application layer and things that will be launching. So the extent that there will be things that people can use, you know, use these applications that are enabled, I think that'll absolutely happen within, you know, the next 12 to 18 months, right? I think some of the longer term goals, right, around like, you know, bringing all the models, all the open source models, right, into this world of crypto AI, right, building really interesting incentive schemes, right, building really performant proof architectures, like that takes a little bit more time, right? And if you go kind of down like the AI stack, we'll say, right, you start with sort of like data, right, and then you have compute as well. Then you can kind of combine those to train models, run models, you can fine tune models, you can serve models. You can transform models, like I said, via quantization distillation, and then, you know, you can do a bunch of other interesting things, right? And there's protocols that are working sort of like at the intersection of like all of these and turning those into what crypto protocols mean. I do think some of them are very close to realization, right? For example, like Allura and Grass are two protocols that, you know, have launched or are launching. Grass has done a really good job of basically using their tech to amass a lot of data that's going to be very, very useful for you know, training models or, you know, hooking them up to contextual information, right? And that's data that they have right now. And that's like a really concrete example of how they were able to use crypto, you know, crypto and primitives and incentives to basically go and amass more data than, you know, most people, right? Or something like Allura where, you know, they're going to be using sort of incentives to get people to continuously improve models to like generate the best models for a given task and really solve that part of like the model origination pipeline. Things like that, I think, will be feasible. Like people are going to be doing that, right? We already see some activity on things like BitTensor. But I think that the thing that's going to be more immediately realizable to people is like, how do these models actually impact the applications you use? How do they actually get to use these models, right? And sort of that's where I think Ritual sits, right? Where we're going to be, you know, the part of the stack that connects all these pieces of infrastructure and it acts as sort of like the layer that's closest to the user and developers. And that, you know, definitely will be, is here and definitely will be here. Like I said, there's already CryptoAI applications that people can use today. But, you know, to completely have crypto subsume, you know, all of AI and the entire AI supply chain, you know, will obviously take a very, very long time. But yeah.
You mentioned a few layers of the AI stack there. Is there any layer which you're like, okay, you know, like this can be relatively centralized as long as these other layers are like completely decentralized? Is there like a certain dynamic there, or do you think like just every single layer of the AI stack should be completely decentralized slash open source?
Yeah, that's a great question. I want to preface with saying that I love all the protocols that are operating at this space, right? I think they're all brilliant, brilliant people. I would say that what I'm expressing is personal opinion and not maybe view of virtual. I do think that, you know, training is a really interesting one. If you look at the way that training has been done, it is very, very compute intensive and it's very latency sensitive, right? Just given the high quantity of volume. And so I think that to the extent that you could build sort of like a peer-to-peer way for training in a decentralized way, where it's like I have one cluster of GPUs sitting somewhere and I can send it and I train my model over that, right? And I coordinate that using sort of like crypto primitives, that's fine. But I think like it'll be a harder task for like fundamental model, like, you know, new model training, right? To be decentralized in a way that's like performant and quick, right? Like training is becoming cheaper and faster, et cetera. And so, you know, I hope I get proven wrong, right? But for now, I think like the actual part of like training these models and origination is fine to be centralized, so long as like people have optionality of many models, which they already do. People can tell that the models were run correctly if they, you know, care about that, which they do. There's a way to access these models in a sort of incentive aligned in a decentralized way, which they do, and right, which will be a selling point for a lot of these. But you know, sort of like off that stack, I think probably training, but not so much from like a you know, shouldn't be decentralized, but more so from like, it's a very hard problem to decentralize. And yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense. Another question that I did want to ask, and I was going to save it for later, but I must ask it here, is what is your AI crypto hot take?
That's tough. I feel like you just made me give one.
That's fair. That's fair.
But what is my AI crypto hot take?
Ren's asking the hard questions here.
I know. I got one hot take. Now I got to give another one. I think that, again, personal opinion, I think that, you know, there's a lot, like I said, there's a lot of hype and capital around what's going into the space right now, but there's actually not a lot of substance. A lot of it is closer to economic games with like a, you know, AI layer on top. And regardless, I think, of, you know, how strong communities are, it's very, very important that you actually go see what's being done, right? You know, and I think that users should not be, yes, price action is great, making money is great. I'm not going to tell you to not go make money, not investment advice, do your own research. But I do think that it's very, very important to sort of evaluate if like a system is actually fundamentally using AI and crypto in a way that actually makes sense, versus this is just like a really gamified way to use incentives and sort of like the money printer for parts of the stack. And I would argue that quite a number of projects out there are sort of doing this in a non-substantive way, or just slapping AI, right? Which may not be a hot take. I think people do know this for what it's worth. It's just, you know, someone's got to come out and say it. So,
yeah, no, I think that's a pretty consensus take, but we'll let you slide since you gave us two.
I have to play it safe. I don't want to piss anyone off.
Yeah, no, I totally understand that. You kind of have given a couple examples over throughout the episode, but for me, like, I get so hung up on like why crypto and AI actually makes sense, just because like I use ChatGPT like, you know, a little bit, but it's not like something that's so helpful for me that I'm using it for like almost every task throughout my day. So like, I already asked you, like, you know, over the next 12 to 18 months, do we actually see useful things? And you're like, yes, I do think we'll see useful things. And I also think it'll get a little bit frothy, which I definitely agree with. But like, what types of actual applications do you see getting developed with the use of AI, like that you can actually see being used during like people's everyday lives?
I'll give you one that's sort of low hanging fruit, but I still think that a lot of teams are working on this, and this is going to be actually incredibly important, right? Which is creating natural language interfaces for interacting with the chain, right? It's no sort of like, you know, hidden secret that like, while we made massive strides in user experience over the past like couple of years, right, that crypto user experience is still like not great, right? It's not awesome, right? Like, I you know, need to, if I want to like on ramp and then go swap for something, like there's like five buttons I need to click right in that process inside a bunch of stuff. And so, you know, it seems very much the case to me that like in the same way that creating really, really cheap scalable execution layers with like fast execution times was like a massive unlock in terms of like bringing users into the space, right? Like with Solana, that the next sort of like version of that that's not actually at like the chain level will be like creating really, really easy interfaces for people to interact with this. So instead of me going like hitting a bunch of buttons, I hook my wallet up to an LLM and I'm like, yo, I want to, I don't know, swap one ETH for like a bunch of what's the meme coin of the moment, like Trump or Zin, right? Zin coin, right? Whatever it is, right? And the thing can go just do that for me, right? That's really, really interesting. And it unlocks a lot of, you know, good usage. And suddenly I think you have this paradigm where it's like interacting with the chain and using it and that being an extension of your life, as opposed to being this activity where you like sit down and you lock in and you have to like click a bunch of buttons and like navigate a bunch of things because you have this model to abstract it for you, will be a really massive unlock, right? Like you may not use ChatGPT in your life, but maybe to presume, Sam, I'm assuming you like use your wallet pretty often, right? Being in crypto. And so this would like drastically help experience that, you know, help with that. I think other applications are like, you know, it may be a little bit more downstream of the end user, but we've quite a number of people that are going and, you know, using, you know, protocols on a daily basis, right? And, you know, not all of them are obviously sitting through governance forums or thinking about like, oh, how is this protocol parameterized or what parts of this protocol, you know, make sense. But maybe going back to an earlier example I mentioned, it's like, if you have agents in the loop, they can actually unlock a lot of core protocol functionality, right? I mentioned Morpho Blue as an example earlier, right? Like creating isolated lending pools unlocks a lot of latent liquidity, a lot of interesting behavior. But the number one sort of like, not problem, but the number one sort of like interesting research direction that I found talking to people who've done this in the past and people are doing it now is sort of like, how do you actually like efficiently parameterize these, right? Like people can set arbitrary LTVs and then, you know, there's some models out there for setting them, right? That are developed. But if you have like a model that you can just like ping and it'll set it for you, right? Deploying these like isolated pools of liquidity are really, really easy, right? So it unlocks a lot of like interesting financial use cases for end users of these DeFi protocols. As two examples, there's many, many more.
I'm going to push back a little bit here. So I've read a lot of like Vogue articles about like LLMs and interacting with the blockchains, right? And there's a few examples you can think of, whether that's like bridging, swapping, opening like a post position. And I think all of those basically, you want like the best execution, right? Whether that's the best bridge execution, the best swap execution, the best place to like open up your perps position. But in my head, at least like there's a solution for all of those, right? There's like bridge aggregators such as like Bungie, there's like DEX aggregators. I don't think it's too impossible to imagine like a DEX aggregator, like a multi-chain DEX aggregator front end, and a similar thing for like perps, right? For example, like in 10x, why do we need LLMs for that? If anything, like LLMs give me like a bit of like uncertainty. Whereas if I'm like on a front end of bridge aggregator, I'm just saying I want to bridge token X from chain A to token Y to chain B, like guarantee me the best execution.
Right. I would view LLMs here as sort of like more of a tool for the user that can plug into all of what you just said, as opposed to like the LLM itself being opinionated around like thing, right? As opposed to the LLM like having a dedicated bridge for that LLM, right? And things like that. Like, you know, if I'm using like a bridge aggregator, like I'm going to tell my LLM I want to get, you know, my ETH from here, from mainnet to, I don't know, like base, right? Or I want to get like, you know, 10 ETH or whatever, one ETH to like base, one ETH to like Arbitrum, one ETH to Optimism, right? I just tell the LLM. And the LLM actually probably has the capability of like going to the bridge aggregator and like submitting these, right? And doing it for you. And so like the main unlock here really is like, you have sort of a unified like language interface for interacting with everything, right? And what actually happens on the back end obviously is up to, you know, the person who will create this, right? Whether they want to basically have the LLM call APIs and hook into all of these services, you know, plug into their own infrastructure, whatever it is, right? But you basically will have sort of one unified interface to do all of this, right? And not have to worry about like navigating to these sites, clicking buttons, etc., right? Once you do that, like interacting with chains becomes a very like interactive, like chat-like experience, right? Which is a really interesting modality. What actually goes on in terms of like the execution, right? Where I'm opening my, you know, perp, right? Where I'm setting my assets. You know, there's a lot of flexibility in what models can do there.
Diving back into the slightly more ritual relevant set of questions. You guys also recently announced a partnership with Eigenlayer using the term restaking for AI. So I guess the first question obviously is, what does restaking for AI mean? And perhaps what type of products and services do you have in mind that will be powered by restaking?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. You know, like I said, it's very, very, very interesting design space in terms of like what it means to have like the sort of like network of nodes that can run models, right? Restaking for AI is basically a way to say that like you can enact, sort of, you can use, you know, EigenLayer's properties to go and have like a lot of EigenLayer operators that have access to GPUs or any compute to service models to act as nodes on InfraNet and Ritual eventually, right? Which means you can also construct schemes using that to basically have the sort of like decentralized inference engine, right? That is Ritual built as like an AVS, right? So from like a restaker perspective, it's like if I am an operator on EigenLayer and I'm serving models via Ritual and I'm monetizing that somehow, right? That yield from actually serving models and bringing sort of like AI operations to users and, you know, me having a stake in case like, you know, I mess up a model, right? And like the proof that I posted is actually found to be incorrect, right? Via EigenLayer is a way to actually pass back those yields back to users. So what, you know, this actually natively sort of like unlocks is as operators on EigenLayer come and participate in InfraNet, eventually the Ritual chain, right? There will be ways in which, you know, they have the ability to capitalize on their ability to service these models, right? That gets passed to people that are staking with them, right? To people that are restaking with them. So that's what restaking for AI means. What it brings to Ritual is a very strong level of security and decentralization from the get-go by using the existing EigenLayer operator network that has access to this to basically power a lot of the inference and AI operations and act as nodes on the Ritual network.
From a developer's perspective, I'm interested to get your take because I feel like we don't necessarily have an abundance of really high quality, even Solidity devs or crypto devs in general. Like crypto and AI feels like it's taking it out even further. How has the demand side on the developer side been for you guys? And do you expect this to grow substantially? My guess would be yes, considering you're building it, but would love to get your take there.
So yes, I do expect it to grow considerably, but I'll give you empirical data points, right? If you go back maybe like a year or two ago, we had, you know, maybe count on my like two hands the number of people that were integrating AI into their protocols. And for a moment, doing really great work. There's protocols like Botto that were, you know, using generative art with Stable Diffusion models and like their own AI innovations at the back end and doing like interesting DAO mechanics around that. And like they were actually generating revenue, right? And they were profitable, right? But like part of my role at Ritual is essentially to help with go to market and the ecosystem and engage developers into building this. The Cambrian explosion that we have seen and people interested in building this as a function of both market cycles, but this technology become robust has been nothing short of astonishing, right? I went from like, what is it? It's almost April, right? So I went from maybe 6 to 8 months ago, right? There being like very few protocols in the space, especially application level protocols. And we had talked to any of them to, I can't even keep up with the number of people that are like launching new protocols every day, right? Trying to build agent frameworks for interacting on chain, right? Like I said, trying to build sort of like generative NFTs or, you know, trying to, you know, inject models and things. In terms of engaging developers, in terms of good ones, right? You're right. There's always, you know, we could always use more talented, you know, devs. And so if you're someone that fits, you know, either has an ML background or a crypto background, please listen to this. I encourage you to go learn the other one. And if you're really good, please reach out to Ritual or come build on us. But I think that will continue to grow. Like I said, I brought up a point earlier about how an influx of capital generally stokes interest and that actually leaves a lot of resources for people who want to come build in this space. And so like there are many sorts of applications and areas where people were really interested in this, right? Like there was a time where even infrastructure is sexy right now, but infra wasn't sexy for a little bit, right? Last cycle. And now infra is super sexy, right? Because there was a lot of monetary inflows, right? And coordinatedly, there was a lot of people that came from other industries to come work on this and in crypto that shifted their focus. One interesting bottleneck that I do see is a lot of applications may need purpose-built models. So, you know, larger foundational models like LLMs and you know, Stable Diffusion models generalize well across a lot of applications, and then you can do really interesting things in terms of composing them, right? But for certain applications, you need more purpose-built models. So it would be interesting. I do think there is sort of a current lack of talent that is good at building sort of ML models specifically adapted to crypto use cases. But I also don't think that's much of an issue, right? We have, like I said, there was a network I mentioned earlier called Allura. There's a few other, you know, historical examples of this, of ways to actually create schemes to incentivize people to come bring the best models for a given task, quantify how well their model performed at a task, and reward them accordingly, right? And again, it's like a very good example of using crypto to solve part of the ML supply chain, which is, you know, creating, you know, models. And so, you know, in terms of engaging developers, I think that the tooling is only going to get better. The availability of models that they can use is only going to get better. And I expect to see substantial growth. We've already seen substantial growth, right? And you know, hopefully we'll be in a good position to give developers the best experience to come build on Ritual and its infrastructure.
I have a market structure question. 10 years down the road, for like something like Ritual Superchain or like AI co-processors, what do you think the market structure will be like? Do you think it'll be like sort of a winner takes all dynamics, or do you think there's space for, you know, like 10 different like AI co-processor protocols out there?
Yeah, really, really good question. You know, I think that if you look at the way that crypto has been done historically, right? Like if you look at infrastructure, for example, right? There's obviously many, many different types of infrastructure and many ways to make it sort of like performant. And it's not really been a winner take all, but it has been very long tailed, right? Like it's very Pareto distributed. There's a few players that capture most of the value, right? And I think that's largely true for actually most crypto applications. You don't really see like a winner take all or like a uniform distribution in many cases. Well, there's a few spaces actually, I will caveat, that are very much winner take all, and few that are like sort of like very sort of uniformly distributed, but overwhelmingly it's like that. So, you know, I would say that's what I imagine it would be. I do think there's going to be a few protocols that are, you know, subsume a large amount of the value. And then like, there'll be a few that, you know, do other things at sort of a more niche optimized level that may take that value. The goal for Ritual, right, is, you know, obviously to just give the best experience to users, right? And as a byproduct of that, you know, if that means that this is where people want to come put their models or build their applications or use a co-processor, that's great. But the focus is, like I said, always giving the best experience. I think if you do that, you build the most performant infrastructure for your dedicated use case, then everything of that in terms of what that entails in the market comes downstream.
Last question for me. You mentioned the MyShell partnership. I just want to double down on that because it kind of seemed like a pretty big deal. Could you kind of elaborate on that partnership a little bit more and what it entails?
Yeah, we love MyShell. I've known Ethan, the founder, since essentially, you know, Ritual started and shortly after MyShell started. And MyShell is incredibly impressive. They have 1 million users and 50,000 creators. MyShell has a suite of open source models that they have available, and they'll be able to use open source models that are hosted on the Ritual network. And users can take these models using MyShell's tooling and interface and compose them into agents and apps. What that means is like you can create like English tutor, like AI, you know, personas, I don't know, like an AI girlfriend or something like that. Or, you know, agents that can actually take actions for you, right? And they have the full stack of like voice cloning to like image generation, et cetera, to text-to-speech, right? But I think where MyShell is really, really innovating is using the Ritual stack, right, with Ritual powering this underneath. They want to create a really interesting way for people to actually have like a patron system around these models. So the idea is that like, you know, if you, Sam, create a model, right? And I think like this model is really good. It has a really good, you know, personality. It fulfills a really niche in terms of like what people want, right? I'll be able to take a stake in that model, right? And users, as they come and, you know, pay for these models and access these models, right? Those payments will actually be divided between us two, right? So it creates a sort of model and ownership paradigm, right, that we really like at Ritual, using sort of all of this infrastructure that we mentioned, a lot of the primitives that we built, to create ways in which people have stakes in the models that they use, as opposed to just like you use a model and then you don't actually see any value beyond like the model output it puts out. And that means that you can create communities around models, you have incentives for people to go in and increase model and like, you know, application and agent adoption, et cetera. And the ways and mechanisms through which that can happen uniquely need to happen sort of like in an on-chain way, right? Given sort of the primitives that we already have existing around that. And that's what we're working with MyShell on.
Okay, good to know that it's more than AI anime waifus on the blockchain. Last question from my side, sort of like, what is the timeline or key priorities for Ritual for the next 3, 6, 12 months?
Definitely. I think like, you know, being in the position we are, obviously we're hyper focused on delivering the best products and the best user experiences. We've been focused on ways to basically make the node more accessible for people to run. We've been focused on ways to engage tighter feedback loops with the community, and also, you know, not only engage with protocols like MyShell, right, to have our infrastructure power there, but also to get, you know, sort of our native ecosystem. And that's very much top of mind for me in the next 3, 6, 12 months. Obviously, we're working on sort of like rolling out, you know, DevNet and Testnet and the chain, right? So users can use that as soon as possible. And, you know, that's a work in progress, but, you know, it's always soon. So, and I think the broader thing is that, like, there's sort of like a lot of misconceptions around crypto and AI, like I said, as a result of both the frothiness in the market and also just like a lack of clarity on the subject. And over the next 3 to 6 months, you know, as in tangential, in, in tandem with rolling out our products and our features, it's also really important to, I think, clarify the narrative around it and like give concrete use cases and things that people can use so they understand how this thing works, right? How these applications work. And that's also very top of mind. And I think that goes hand in hand with growing the ecosystem, delivering purpose-built infrastructure for this, you know, AI crypto use case, and getting that in the hands of users, right? That's like all a feedback loop. So 3, 6, 12 months from now, like we want to scale that from like the Infinite ecosystem, people using Infinite and developing applications, to like the chain itself, right? While sort of like growing the stack across, and, you know, also targeting other parts of the supply chain with partners around like, how do we get more models that are dedicated to crypto in crypto, which we should have a very exciting announcement around that soon, and things like that. So yeah.
Nice. That's super refreshing to hear. I love that you're putting a focus on like actual useful, tangible products above like, you know, all else. So Sunil, this has been an awesome conversation. We'll have to get you back on in like 6 months or so to talk about it again, but we'll drop a link to Ritual's Twitter, your Twitter, as well as Ritual's website in the show notes. But thank you so much for coming on. It was a real pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you guys so much for having me. This is awesome. Great questions too.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We have teamed up with the Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol, the leading interoperability platform powering cross-chain transfers for over 200 plus multi-chain dApps. Wormhole isn't just a bridge. It's the leading interoperability platform for multi-chain applications. So go and claim your unique Wormhole NFTs just for 0x Research listeners today. Hit the link in the description to fill out a form and to prove that you've listened to today's episode and receive a PoApp. You get an email over the coming weeks to claim your limited edition NFT.